Hi, I'm Robert.
I'm Jaron.
And this is what we really thought
of the Lorax.
I'm 3D, the secret world of Arrietty and Project X.
We're going to start with the Lorax. So the Lorax is an animated movie. We saw it in IMAX 3D. It's based on a Dr. Seuss book of the same name. And the movie is about a kid named Ted who likes a redhead girl named Audrey. So she's into trees somehow.
So he goes to get that bitch some trees because bitches like trees.
He decides to try and find a tree. So he talks to the Onceler, who knows about the trees. The Onceler tells him what happened to all the trees and how to get a tree and such. What do you think of the Lorax, Jaron? That makes it sound like it's bad, doesn't it?
Yes. I was surprisingly entertained with it. I don't know if I had any like high hopes for it, but I kind of got the feeling that I think a lot of other people got, just based off of the trailers and based off of some kind of the nonsense you saw on it, that it was going to be kind of like real, like, facepalm-worthy kind of, like, bad stuff. Just kind of your typical, like, I thought for sure I was going to be seeing a lot more, like, pop culture stuff happening in it. Like, a whole bunch of, like, random pop culture references for no apparent reason. You know?
Which there was a little bit of.
There was, but not near what I was expecting. You know, like, it did do some of the stuff you were expecting, but none of it was, like, really, really painful to sit through. You know, most of it, I don't know. I was able to enjoy myself with the movie, so.
This was my second time seeing it, I can say. I watched in 3D both times, but only the one time in IMAX 3D. I can say it's definitely worth it to see it in 3D and IMAX 3D if that's at a theater near you. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed it. There were some aspects that I didn't like or had questions about. Most of it is plot logistics, not other things. Yeah. I don't know. I think you're always going to have trouble expanding some source material like that into a feature length.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it filled out, Seuss himself adapted it into a TV version, which was half an hour.
Yep.
So to flesh it out for 90 minutes, you're going to run into some problems because of how you're expanding it. I'm not entirely sure if I want to get into some of them, the non-spoiler sections.
Yeah,
but,
I think we can wait.
But I can go through some of my complaints now. There is a lengthy chase scene towards the end, which makes sense in this type of movie, or makes sense in within the plot things they've set up, but it also feels out of place in a Dr. Seuss thing, so it's sort of conflicting in that aspect. The songs were okay. I wasn't expecting it. It is sort of a musical, or musical-esque. I mean, there's four or five songs in it.
Yeah. I don't know if it's enough to really consider
not
like
quite
a
musical, but more like Disney musical.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm wondering what I should mention or whatnot.
Well, we could probably leave it at
what
that.
What do you think of the voice acting? I guess that's...
Given the talent they were using, I think it was surprisingly... I think the voice talent was surprisingly well-directed. They could have definitely gotten away with half-assing a lot of what they did, and it really seems like they tried in places, so I did like that.
I had problems with Rob Riggle the first time around.
Yeah.
I still have a little bit. I don't quite feel the voice matches the design.
I mean, I agree.
That's what they're going for, but even within that, I feel like there probably was better voice casting to do with the big voice on a little guy.
Yeah. I like Rob Riggle, but he's not necessarily a go-to for that type of voice. He didn't necessarily do a bad job, but I do definitely know what you mean by him not necessarily being the right fit. But he didn't. I was able to live with it. You know, like I said, he didn't do a bad job. It just, he wasn't, might not have been necessarily the correct fit. Everybody else seemed to do a pretty good job.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think of the heavily hyped Zac Efron and Taylor Swift in this? Who,
again,
I think pretty much got first bill in all the advertising.
They did. Again, they did a well enough job. I'm gonna say a big portion of that was probably whoever directed the voice talent, because Taylor, I mean Zac Efron is an actor. Taylor Swift really isn't, so I don't know how much of a background she had, but both of them turned in believable and you know, definitely at places likable. Zac Efron was definitely likable as the character. I mean, sometimes he got a little bit too cartoony, but it's Dr.
Yeah.
Seuss.
Yeah, he did get a hammered up within that.
It was Dr. Seuss, so.
He had a little bit to do, and she really didn't.
She really didn't. What she did,
she was a character well motivator.
Yeah, what she did sounded well enough, but she really doesn't have enough for you to, like, get it solid. But I guess my point was, like, nobody really stuck out. Like, it was like, oh my god, I can't listen to them anymore. You know, everybody did well performing in the world that they're in, so they certainly did a decent job with the voice acting.
The biggest weakness of the movie is the present day or the framing, whatever. Yes. The yes. elements, the parts with Zac Efron, yeah. Taylor Swift. It's not them, it's just the fact that the parts with the Lorax and the Onceler, you know, explaining why there are no more trees was the part, you know.
Yeah.
Most directly based off of Dr. Seuss's stuff, and some of it is taken verbatim or, you know, straight out of the pages, so that's why it's the strongest bit. All the present day stuff seems a little bit rushed or forced or not as deep as the other bits. It's not as interesting. You're just waiting for them to get to the rest of the Lorax story. Then after that's done, there's still some sense of urgency, but it's not as interesting, I feel, as learning how this world came to be.
Yeah, I was going to dig into that a bit more in the more spoiler-filled section, so I don't have to talk in, like, vague, you know, in vagueness. But the one part of the story that did feel like it was strained was when they were trying to cut back and forth between the flashback that describes the actual Lorax story and the framing device that is the stuff currently happening. They play with it a little bit. There's a couple of moments where it is entertaining because of the way they play with it, but they're not enough to completely rescue it from the fact that it is strained. You know, the rescue it from the fact that the flashback is the strong part, and
I mean,
the framing device is the weaker.
The framing device is entirely theirs. I mean, looking at the original Lorax plot description right here, it's just the boy goes and seeks out the Onceler to find out about the trees.
Yeah.
He tells the story, and then he tells him, you know, plant this tree, and that's it.
But in their defense, the complaint against the framing device isn't necessarily to say that the framing device is bad. It's in their defense. It's not like half-assed necessarily handled. Like it feels appropriate. Like it definitely feels like it could have possibly been an addition added on to the story. I kind of wish it would have been maybe thought out a little bit more, maybe try to figure out how to weave the flashback story into the framing device a little better to make everything run a bit smoother. You know, the framing device doesn't seem out of place necessarily, but it does kind of seem like they're just rehashing what happened in the flashback story, only in the present day stuff, you know, just for the sake of them finding something to do. You know, really the characters and the world that surrounds everything isn't as much of an issue as much as it is the driving part of the plot, which is Rob Riggle's character and, you know, the whole romance thing. Even the romance thing is fine. It's really, I guess, Rob Riggle's character, the whole, you know, tycoon that's trying to stop people. That's really the part that gets the most strained is, you know,
it's been done a lot, and it seems out of place in a Dr. Seuss story. Uh-huh.
And especially when we get to closer to the end, and we're you know, having like all of a sudden motivations flip like a switch. All of a sudden stuff starts playing a lot weirder.
Did you? What do you think of having Betty White in it?
I liked her. Enjoyed her.
You enjoyed her.
Her character again is just pure motivation, purely just there for
plot device.
Yeah. Hey, you should go do this. Why? Well, because you should. But she's enjoyable enough. And the other nice part about her is she's not around long enough for her to overstay her welcome. She gets to do her fun little bits, and then we just move on. The one thing I do want to know is she a wizard? Because she manages to wrap stuff around that cane around stuff, and it doesn't look like there's any conceivable way to do that. I think that's pretty much everything.
Okay, that's all I have for non-spoilers. Well, the Lorax, I can go into some of my specific. Didn't you have more on the songs?
Oh, yeah. The songs aren't necessarily out of place. The musical aspect was another part that felt strained in places, mainly because they just kind of come out of nowhere.
Did you have a favorite or least favorite song?
Favorite-wise, no, I didn't really have
a favorite. At least one that you hated the least?
But I did have,
tolerated the most?
I don't know. I guess of all of them, the ending song, I probably enjoyed slightly more than the rest of them.
The Let It Grow?
Yeah. It was slightly, I mean, there were some parts where I was like, you're still straining this whole musical thing, but, the tune wise, I thought it played a little better. The only one that kind of bugged me was the
How Bad Can I Be?
Yeah, that one where, you know, I understood the point of it because we're moving, you know, from he starts his industry to we're chopping down all the trees. I got that. It was just the song was a bit too on the nose. Like that was about the only point in the movie where it felt like they were taking the environmental. You know, the environmentalism, like concept and, like, beating you over the head with it.
I kind of like that section. I like the montage itself and the visuals. Yes. It was beating you over the head, but uh-huh. I just like the visuals itself, so I didn't mind.
I can agree with that.
I did have a little problem with the song. I mean, it wasn't, I don't know, I feel like it should have been catchier for that, yes. Just to sort of subvert the fact that yes, they're doing this,
exactly.
this uh-huh. terrible imagery in some places to have it be uh-huh. really catchy uh-huh. would be really awesome.
Exactly. See, that I can completely agree with that. If the song had been a little bit more catchy, I probably wouldn't have as much of an issue with it, but it was the fact that it wasn't a bad song per se, it was just the message and the lyrics were way too on the nose of environmentalism is good. Industry is bad, you know. What harm am I? Especially he starts getting near the end, and like he's just straight up like,
yeah,
demolishing the environment, and
he looks evil in the last shot
and reveling in it. And it's like you're not even trying to like send a mixed message about this now. You're just like straight up just saying it now, and it kind of bugged me. It was like, okay, a little bit too on the nose there for a while. But yeah, visually it wasn't off-putting at all. It was actually pretty cool, which is why
I prefer green Ed Helms to the other foresty red Helms.
Yeah.
Just the look of them, it's more interesting, which I guess is the original. From what I can tell, the original book, they sort of hid whether it was a human or not.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was in shadow, and you couldn't quite tell, even in the flashback, whether he was human or not. He was just decked out in green or something the whole time, so.
Yeah.
That's why I think that's one reason why that appealed to me more, just the look of that is, well, I guess that is the Seuss design, is him in the green.
Yep.
He looks cool. Although the glasses, a little bit much.
Yeah. I agree.
My next bits are, you know, again, seeing a chase sequence in the end of the Warrock seems a little bit odd. Is that guy carrying a bag full of money or something? He looked like a security guard.
Yes. He's carrying a bag of money.
You went out the exits.
There you go.
Maybe he is.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Chase sequence.
What's chase? Yeah, it felt a little bit odd. And the resolution from that, you know, the very end where these two henchmen had been working for the short guy O'Hare and trying to steal this seed. All of a sudden, the ending song turn on him and basically kick him out of his town.
Yes.
Yeah, for no reason other than it's the end.
Yeah, that's where I was getting at with the whole... That was the most strained part where it seemed like people's, like, motivations and, like, opinions were flipping just like nothing. Because they weren't the only ones. Like, the town was the same way. Like, as soon as... As soon as O'Hare was, like, rallying people, they were all about destroying the seed and, I'm guessing, murdering this family. Is the vibe that you get. And then all of a sudden, in, like, one motion, like, he knocks down the wall, which apparently was fairly flimsy considering he just knocks it down with one bulldozer. And it looked like it was made of metal. So he pushes this wall down that everybody apparently has never been outside before. They see, like, oh my god, the world is like...
That's another weird thing. It's, which again, is on the filmmakers because it's not part of the original Seuss, but...
We're to believe that nobody has ever been outside the wall.
Yeah, we see in the original, the beginning of the Once Were's Tale that... You know, he traveled the world to find the perfect material for his needs. Uh-huh. And we see, you know, sort of lakish areas. I think we see a desert.
Yeah.
Then he ends up in the place with the truffles trees, which I guess he named.
I guess. I don't know. Isn't that what the Lorax called him, too?
Well, he called it truffle trees first, and no one told him it was called a truffle tree.
Well, again,
but
maybe
also,
he
had never been there before.
Maybe he just knew they were called that.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. One of those things I think we're just supposed to.
But we
over.
See it's a bigger world out there, yet no one in this city has ever been outside of it. And they appear to be locked into the city because as soon as Ted tries to leave the city, O'Hare is like, hey, there's no reason for you to ever leave the city.
And then at one point in time, he locks them in. Like, he, like, closes off the door, the one door that goes out. Which the back of my mind was like, that should be illegal, right? Like, you can't do that, right?
Nope. Yeah, I mean, the mom kicks him out of the house, so it's not like he owns the properties, I guess. Because
exactly.
She's able to kick him out.
Despite the fact that he's the most powerful person in town.
Which leads me to another thing. I guess it could be... So the Onceler, his need business is so great that it appears that he has bought and redesigned that town.
Yes.
Into Thneedville. It used to be called something like... Greenville, I think, was the name.
Yeah.
Turned into Thneedville. I mean, he has, like, little tiny buildings on his desk, so I'm guessing he built the town.
Yes.
Yet, as soon as that last tree falls, that he went out of business, even though he appears to have constructed and owned this town called Thneedville.
I think that was another, I think that was another storyline.
That's on them. That's the filmmakers, not Seuss.
Yeah.
Serve a logic that I'm sure kids probably won't think about, but that doesn't quite make sense.
Yeah, another casualty to the story, you know, kind of having to. I think it was.
It could also just be something off screen they didn't explain. Like, say, it's not that he's bankrupt; he just quit after seeing, oh hey, I cut down all the trees and all the animals
that
leaving.
That could be too. They had it. Speaking of that moment.
And where was that factory when Ted was exploring? We didn't see the factory.
That's a good question.
The house.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a good fucking question. I don't know where that factory went. Unless he walks past it, but I don't... drives past it, but I don't think he did. Maybe he got torn down. there's a moment that was really kind of funny because of how out of place it was in this, like... happy-go-lucky, like, you know, like, really colorful, fun little movie.
Yeah.
There's this, like,
truly depressing moment where, like, they're all sitting outside the factory and, like, almost all the trees are cut down and, like, they're coughing and hacking because the smoke.
The montage, the song montage.
Yeah, after the song montage. And, like,
the birds, and, most like, of its feathers have been burned off.
And like, the one that really got me
was the fish covered with chocolate, with the
what I'm guessing is the sludge and the oil or whatever.
Sludge.
The runoff. Yeah. There's a part in the song where, like, he's like,
Smoggity smog.
Like, blorp or something. Like,
sludge.
Yeah, he makes a sound effect for the sludge coming out and covering the creatures in black death. He makes this, like clever little colorful sound effect for it. Like, oh my god. But yeah. They're all hacking and stuff, and the fish is just kind of sitting there like it's having, like, war flashbacks. I was like, and like there's nothing, like, comical about it at all. We just see it, and then they move on. I was like, wow, that was horribly depressing for a kids movie.
Now, there is a little bit, I guess, I want to get to about Seuss's story itself that they could have expanded upon in here.
Yeah.
I think. But the Lorax doesn't do much in the Lorax.
No, he doesn't.
I mean, he has sort of a role to play in the, in, like, the actual story of the Lorax, you know, like, where, but even still, he's kind of just a side note to that whole event happening.
Yeah.
You know, he's just kind of there to kind of say his piece and then move on. And then, like, after he floats away, after he grabs his
ass, I found that comical.
It's supposed to be this touching, like, sort of semi-touching scene where, like, you know, he realizes, you know, what
he's
done.
For some reason, I thought they were calling on religious imagery with that.
I think that does kind of stand, considering it's, like, the one shining light ray from the clouds, and then he floats off into the sky. And but it's the point that, like, in order to fly, apparently, he needs to hold on to his ass. So you're trying not to laugh at this image of him holding on to his ass and floating away, but there's sad music. And, like, it's supposed to be, like, this message and stuff like that. And it's just not part of it's undermined by the fact that he has to hold on to his ass in order to fly. Also, when he arrives, he arrives via, like, lightning bolt. So either he's a Highlander or he's Thor.
The Thorax.
And he travels via the Rainbow Bridge, via the Bifrost.
Hey, that could be one of the Seven Kingdoms or whatever.
You're right, it could be.
We haven't seen all of them yet.
That's true.
Dr. Seuss tie.
But yeah, that did, so yeah.
There was something else I was going to bring up, but I forgot, so I don't know why I'm even saying that. Just dragging out the time now.
Yes, you are.
But I'll cut it anyway, so I guess it doesn't matter, because I'm not dragging it. Uh-huh. I'm just trying to think out loud in case I remember it, so then I can put it on here and not have to somehow re-edit a thought that I came up with later. And Oh, there it is. I thought, and maybe this is just cultural indoctrination from seeing a bunch, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of movies. I thought Betty White's character, which I was sort of annoyed with, just, I have no problems with Betty White herself, but the character seemed a little bit too hip for this thing, and too self-aware.
Yeah,
even when they had bits like, how cool is your grandma?
Yeah. I don't know. I guess in some respects I was just kind of reveling in the silliness of it all at that moment. I did kind of like how self-aware the movie was at that exact moment in time. Because in the back of my mind, I was like, oh yeah, that's the world's coolest grandma. And then somebody on screen goes, how cool is your grandma? It's like they were like, they knew you were going to be thinking about it.
But I thought that they were going to make it more personal. Yeah, like the fact that she knew about the Once Were and all this stuff.
I did too.
I thought she was going to turn out to be the Once Were's mom.
Somebody, right?
And she had changed her mind about things. Although, then again, why wouldn't she have told him the story? But that's where I thought that was going.
Yeah.
You know, because she kept talking about missing the trees and such like that.
It could be at one point in time, maybe there was a draft where she was directly related to Wunsler. You know? Or at least directly connected to the story in some way. Like, maybe it could be even somewhat, because I had originally thought, I had gotten this kind of, like, idea that maybe she was originally supposed to be the same kind of motivation for Wunsler as
Audrey
is for Ted. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Because it did make sense in my mind, because they seemed like they would be around the same age, and it would be the kind of, like, mirror type story that they were kind of already going for with other stuff in the story. So maybe there was at one point in time supposed to be a version where she was somehow directly connected to Wunsler. It definitely would have made her character tie into the story a lot better, and she would have been a lot less of, like, just this superfluous kind of, like, fun, you know, like, add-on.
Mm-hmm. I know, that was my expectation. I don't know whether that would have been cliched or not, but that's what I was expecting to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, with a story like this, cliched is what works. You know?
Yeah.
No one's looking to break the formula. Especially not with the Lorax.
So, bad jokes. That's a woman? In all the trailers.
I'm really glad that that one of the jokes that fell really flat was one of the ones they just tossed in the trailer.
I felt like the Mission Impossible bit was out of place.
Yeah.
I mean, they did do one or two bits of meta humor where Ted is breaking into the story. Wait a second. Then young Wunsler stares at the screen. Can we get to, is there a song about getting a tree?
That leads to me getting a tree?
Because I'd like to hear that one.
That joke made me very happy.
That was good.
If only because that was like one of the...
I think that's right after the song about the kid who was impatient about listening to the story and then was never heard from again.
That joke made me very happy, if only because that was like where the second song fell in and you were already starting to get that why is this a musical vibe, and it's almost like they knew you were going to get that and they fed off it by the fact that the kid was starting to, also the concept that now you have to accept that somehow Wunsler had like played out a whole musical number from up there for him, or at least told him and described a musical number. All right, and then there was totally this part where the bears and the fish and that I just met, we all started dancing together, and I
there's that implication.
So I really liked that's how that played out. So that joke, just because of so many funny layers that could be on top of it, worked for me. But yeah.
Let it die, let it die.
That made me kind of happy, if only because...
That is true to that character, instead of doing a 180.
Yeah, that is exactly true to that character. Oh, yeah, that did... They had some good ideas, and some... I mean, it was, you know, overall, it was certainly better than I would have ever expected a rehash of the Lorax, especially one where they take a bunch of like risks and like with the story. That's not necessarily the word I'm looking for. Some liberties with the story. You know, they take a bunch of liberties with it and try to make it appeal to today's hip.
The young Donkey Kongs.
Yeah, you know. It turned out a lot better than I was expecting it to turn out. They really could have phoned it in and just kind of... But it really did... It really at least did kind of... You know, it did to tell me that I was right to at least sort of like Despicable Me. It wasn't a great story. You know, it wasn't a great movie, but there were some elements that kind of worked about it. And the same thing was true about this one. It wasn't, like, amazing, but I did like it more than Despicable Me, and, you know, it did have some elements that did kind of tell me that, you know, it they are at least trying, you know, they didn't just phone it in with this one, so.
That's all I have for the War Axe.
Yep.
Next to the Secret World of Arietti.
Secret World of Arietti?
I know it's something, something Arietti.
Yeah,
so just Arietti. Let's just call it Arietti.
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. Yeah, okay. That's right next.
All right.
The Secret World of Arietti is an animated film by Studio Ghibli, who brought us the Academy Award winner Spirited Away, Howl's Moving Castle, My Neighbor Totoro,
Totoro,
Kiki's Delivery Service, Princess Mononoke, was that them?
Mononoke.
Among things.
Among others.
Yeah. They're, I think it's fair to say they're the top of the line in Japanese animation.
They're certainly one of them. I mean, it's certainly the most well-known that we're going to know over here. Definitely. They're definitely a benchmark for quality when it comes to animated films.
So it's somewhat based on the series of novels The Borrowers. At least it's taking the concept of the Borrowers, who are tiny people, I don't know, maybe an inch high, who live under normal people's houses and take things in order to survive. In the Secret World of Arietti, a boy named Sean with heart problems visits his aunt's place in preparation for an upcoming operation. While there, he sees Arietti, one of the borrowers, and Arietti does things, and that's the movie.
Yeah.
What do you think of The Secret World of Arietti?
It was all right. Kind of wish there was more going on in the plot. It really kind of meandered around, and there really wasn't, I don't know, there really wasn't a whole lot of sense of urgency in the plot. There is one part where they finally get to, you know, like kind of something happening, but even then, it's really kind of low. It seems like it should be high stakes, but for some reason it feels really low. There's not a whole lot going on in the plot, but yeah, I know overall it was all right.
Yeah, it was okay. It's forgettable, I'd say. I'm not certain I'll recall seeing this in a month.
Yeah, certainly one of Studio Ghibli's kind of weaker efforts.
The animation is nice.
Yeah, definitely.
Some of the characterization is good. I don't mind there being no plot, but there's not really a lot of character development either.
Yeah.
And there's not much of our two leads interacting.
Unfortunately.
Which is really the draw of this type of thing. At least the advertising seemed to
suggest
that this was about a budding friendship between a tiny person and a kid.
And really, in all honesty, they share like maybe three whole scenes together.
Yeah. They have a deep conversation once during the whole thing, and that's it.
And it really comes out of nowhere. They're just kind of standing there. They're kind of chatting, and then all of a sudden, deep conversation.
I don't even mind. I'm just going to go into spoilers here, because there's not much to spoil in this.
No. You pretty much know the plot. You pretty much know everything that happens based off of the trailers. I mean,
he moves in, he sees the girl, they go on a borrowing adventure, he sees the girl, he leaves them something, parents say don't take it, because then that'll prove that we exist, da-da-da. She gives it back to him, gets into trouble, da-da-da, he gets curious. Some reason the housemaid is obsessed with finding them after seeing one tiny sign that maybe they exist.
Well, that made a little bit more sense because later they kind of establish, way too late, but they kind of establish that she's known for a long time that they were there. I think she's kind of like his aunt or something like that.
Well, the family is aware that there's a legend of these things existing.
Yeah, but she was one of the people that always noticed that things were missing. It's like one line where they kind of toss that out, where she's like, you know, I'm not crazy, you know, here I have proof.
She decides to, yeah, the relationship sort of develops, but not really, between Arietti and Sean. They interact once,
truly one of
necessity, right towards the end. Then the housekeeper finally figures out where they are, takes the mother, and hires a pest service to find the rest of them. Sean gets her back, and the borrowers leave.
Like, that's the end. Like, even where it seems like they could continue on into something else, like, they could have easily, like, gone through with the surgery and kind of, like, they could have kept living there. There could have been some type of relationship there to end it off with. It's pretty much just they leave, and he even says in a finishing dialogue that he never saw them again. He just hears rumors of another house talking about things coming up missing.
Yep.
Like, there's really no there's really not much of a beginning, there's really not much of a conclusion, and there's really not much of anything that happens in between.
It's a meandering flick, which would have been easier, and I've seen movies like this, they've worked, where it's not plot-driven, it's character-driven, it's more of a meeting of people, they hang around, and then it ends. But again, these two main characters don't interact much.
And even among the family, there's not a whole lot going on. Like, they don't really learn much about anybody.
The details of their lives, how they work, is interesting, but we don't know much about the characters to really, I don't know.
Warrant having watched it?
Yeah, I guess. It's hard to talk about it just because there's not a lot.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, it was just kind of okay.
Born 4 preview. Have you seen that yet?
Uh-huh.
All right. We might catch it with one of our other flicks. I don't know.
But anyway, yeah. It was just kind of okay. It just kind of happened.
Yeah, probably my biggest complaints are, again, you know, the characters don't interact. There's no reason to care about this movie. The housekeeper seems to be, I mean, once she discovers that they really do exist, the housekeeper sort of goes insane and...
Yeah.
And
that's the only time.
Her motivation isn't developed. We get one toss-up line at the very end of...
Yeah.
You're blaming me for all these things that were gone, but they've really been stealing them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's after the whole thing is unfolded.
Yeah.
She says that.
They still don't explain her motivation for, like, wanting, like, them punished for some, you know, like, other than, like, the whole thing. Like, it almost seems like when she's going to hire the pest people, that she, like, wants them dead. Like, it's just kind of, like, way out of left field. So, yeah. I mean, like... the good points. It's Studio Ghibli. It does look good. I enjoyed the music.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I had a problem with the pop songs, or not pop songs, I don't know, the songs. I didn't enjoy them. I felt like they were distracting. Even though they're of a type with that sort of movie, I found, I still always find that distracting.
I didn't say that it meshed well. It just, you know, some of the tracks I kind of enjoyed. But, I mean, other than the ones where the vocals actually are part of it, it seemed like it was alright. It just, I liked a couple of tracks, but I don't know. Really, as a whole, the whole thing didn't kind of work for me. So, I mean, it has some good points that are like standard kind of Studio Ghibli good points, but. I mean, other than that, there really wasn't... Like I said, it's definitely one of their weaker efforts.
Any comments on the voice casting? On the voice acting?
The Disney went with their normal thing where they pick kind of like just regular actors to fill roles. They don't pick like actual, like...
not A-list celebrities or not superstars.
Yeah, yeah. They don't pick, like, actual, like maybe, like, voice talent that, like, usually does a lot of voice acting. They pick, you know, some people that are just kind of, like, somewhat unknown, just regular actors and stuff. But, I mean, you know, overall, it wasn't bad. I did kind of have an issue with her dad kind of being a bit too reserved. I think that was just a character decision. Like, he was supposed to sound that way, but there was a lot of times where he just sounded like...
Yeah, from the facial expressions, I expected the Japanese was probably the same way.
Uh-huh. He just felt, like, wholly distant, and I think that's more an issue with the character writing and less with the voice acting. It just, he came off really cold sometimes when I don't think he was supposed to come off that cold. But, you know, I mean, the voice acting serviceable. Nothing, like, amazing, like, standout. Like, I thought that was the most amazing thing ever, but nothing that was, like, really distracting for me. Other than, like, the dad being unusually cold.
I thought the weak link was Sean.
He does come off really weird. And I think the reason he comes off weird is more to do with the translation and less to do with the voice acting itself. The translation from the Japanese was very, like, on the nose, and when you translate from Japanese, you can't get that on the nose with it. If you do that, it ends up coming across really kind of broken and alien. You know, you kind of have to tailor the conversation to make it feel like it flows a little more naturally. And there were some things that he said that came across like they were just direct translations. So, but yeah, he definitely was the weak link. He did kind of come across a bit too, I don't know, like, distant sometimes.
Yeah, he wasn't compelling. He seemed somewhat disinterested.
Yeah, and it was just coming across to his voice, the way that he was talking, kind of sounded like he wasn't actually in the conversation. He was just kind of commenting on it. So, I don't know.
Do you have anything else on Arietta?
I don't think so. I think that pretty much covers everything.
Alright, then.
Lastly, we have Project X.
Yes.
A found footage.
The other one.
Or me, just... What's called a mockumentary? I don't know.
I really don't know.
Found footage makes sense as a label in some case, but in this case,
it's more
it's not like it's found footage. No one found it afterwards, as far as we can tell.
No, it's more of a... It's really hard.
We don't even know what the after timeline is, but...
Yeah.
Okay, it's a fake documentary about some kids who throw a 17th birthday party... Guy, they're all losers in high school, and their plan is to have a gigantic party to launch them to the top of the social strata.
Take it to the next level.
I think they're seniors because they mock freshmen, but yeah, it's hard to tell. They didn't quite get into that.
Yeah, they might be seniors. I'm not sure.
The guy whose birthday it is Thomas
Cub.
One of them is what? TJ? TB?
JB.
JB. And the one who would be a villain in any other form of this movie is...
Yeah.
I want to say Kripke. No, Koska.
Yeah, Koska. Koska or Costco.
Kripke.
Kripke?
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say. It's Kripke.
It's like Costco or something like that.
Costa.
Costa. There we are. Yeah. He would, in any other form of this movie, he would have just been the villain.
There's a line towards the end there, like in the last 15, 20 minutes when they're... The last 15 minutes, where they're standing on top of the house looking at the expanse of their party.
Uh-huh.
And
just look at what we did.
Look at what we did.
That in any other movie, that would have been just, the turning point where like the hero would have finally walked away from the villain.
And the way he said it just felt like it was a villainous line. His delivery just look at what we did.
Like it was going to be the exact nuke or something. Yeah, like it was going to be the exact moral cut where one of them was really proud of it, one of them was ashamed. I mean, technically, that's what they were going for, but it I don't know. It was just funny the way it played. Anyway.
I don't know, the director was produced by Todd Phillips, who directed and contributed to the writing of The Hangover and The Hangover Part 2
uh-huh.
School. I guess he was unofficially a writer, but due to Writers Guild arbitration, it's very difficult for a director to get writing credit.
Okay, yeah. So what was, considering this is a spoiler, free, what was your opinion of it?
I'm kind of feeling like Arrietty, just screw it, let's get into all of it together.
Okay, let's just, we're going to lump it all in, buddy.
Let it
fly. Let it open. So,
this was painful to sit through, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not entire. One last credit.
Yeah.
Has story by and co-written by Michael McCall, who co-wrote Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, yeah. I remember reading that now. Yeah.
Wonderful Scott Pilgrim, man.
Yeah.
I think he co-wrote 21 Jump Street.
Uh-huh.
Or
he did. He had a hand in it.
Which we'll be talking about in a couple of weeks.
Yes. So, you...
Painful to sit through.
Yeah.
I don't quite want to say it's a bad movie.
Yeah, unfortunately.
But it is painful. It seems endless.
Yeah.
Most of that is due to, one, just the very nature of the movie, documenting a party. And just documenting a party, this feels like a very long thing. I mean, you're experiencing a party in...
real time.
Filmed, edited chunks.
Uh-huh. And you aren't drunk.
You're not drunk. You're not actually at the party, so it feels long.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
The protagonists are almost all unlikable. I mean...
Yeah.
Kostka...
Oh, my God.
The epitome of...
first 10... Yeah.
And...
10 minutes in, I wanted to put a bullet in him.
Douchebag.
Yeah.
He's also the he's the avatar of the tribes.
Yes. Yeah, 10 minutes in, I wanted to put a bullet in him. 10 minutes in, I was...
2 minutes in for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, not bullet, but, you know, just...
Yeah, yeah. I was already praying that... I was like, I really wish this movie was like a slasher flick, and I knew that he was going to die a horrible, painful death. Because, oh, God, he was just painful.
The dialogue was...
JB was kind of non-existent.
I guess naturalistic.
Made yeah, to
feel like
to an
something
extent.
People would say.
To an extent. But for the most part, I had
it's
a real problem...
reading dialogue.
It was hard to sit through for me, too. Particularly, everything before the party was really hard to sit through.
Yeah.
Once they got to the party, the dialogue was a lot more infrequent. And, you know,
yeah,
it started
it's more
bouncing
about
around.
The experience of the party.
Yeah, so once it got there, the movie, if you could say the movie hits its stride anywhere, it would be during the party, where it started to, all right, I actually get the point of the movie finally. But all of the setup, it's just driving around with them while basically Costa just grates on your nerves for like 15, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
That was the longest part of the movie for me. I couldn't stand him. I couldn't stand him, pretty much. It just did. God, it was awful. And
it was the weakest point of the movie.
And it was really hard because I don't know. I mean, I guess the dialogue was quote unquote natural. You know, if we're basing it off of what most people consider the, you know, kids that age now, how they talk and stuff. But I honestly don't know anyone who talks like that. You know. It's not. It wasn't even like you know, like an exaggerated version, like in like Superbad, where it was kind of an exaggerated version of that, you know, exaggerated for comedy's sake. This was just like to the point where it was grating, annoying, and sometimes just downright hurtful and like angry and like bigot like language.
Yeah.
You know, just yeah. But like I said, it gets a little easier to stand after the setup once the party actually happens.
It felt very long, and
yeah.
Once they got past the party, there's an extended epilogue.
Yeah, I guess that's what you can call it.
At least 5 minutes.
Uh-huh.
It felt like longer,
yeah.
Just because they reached a natural endpoint, then they jump to afterwards.
Yeah, exactly.
And then they reach another endpoint, and then they keep going for a while. Then even within that ending, there are other problems, like, say, oh, he has this girl who's basically part of the gang, even though we don't see them all hanging out, so there's a disconnect there.
Yeah.
He has sex with her during the party, off camera, I guess.
Basically,
then,
yeah.
Then the most popular girl in the high school starts to have sex with him. His friend walks in.
For no reason.
Crying.
There's really, I mean, granted, it's like a part, it's like a big party. It's really hard to follow people, and it's just cameras following people for the sake of catching the action. But there is literally, like, no reason for her to have walked in on that, in that moment. Like, none whatsoever. Unless she just randomly decided, oh my god, I haven't seen him in, like, 15 minutes. I need to go hunt him down. Which, there was plenty of times in that party where she didn't go hunting him down when she hadn't seen him for long periods of time. It just, I don't know, it was kind of, it was really contrived.
Yeah.
Which, but you know, understandably.
In the ending, everyone, you know, all the damage is done. He's facing criminal charges. Yeah.
At least they didn't write it off. I was really worried they were going to write it all off. You know what I mean?
And he's facing, you know, heat from his parents.
Yeah.
They go to school. Everyone applauds them. They're legends now. He sees his friend. She runs off. He goes to catch her. They basically talk through the whole thing in a minute. And she makes out with him at the end.
I will say, to some, like, to the film's credit, the party does reach absolutely insane levels that you could, I could actually see, like, you know, like,
it evolves into a riot.
Yeah, exactly. It just basically evolves into a riot. The point where the drug dealer guy
pops in with the flamethrower
was Iron Man Mark 1 suit. Yeah, that was a bit much. They may have overstepped their bounds there, but it does reach such a proportion that you could definitely see, like, riot police showing up and, like, you know, like, news, you know, following it and stuff. So I guess, to their point, you know, if that was what they were going for, I guess they got it. You know, it just, I don't know.
I haven't been to enough parties to know that's the feel, but I mean,
it could
be that's the feel of a party like that, or how someone would maybe,
there's
their perception of a party would be. Maybe that's what they're trying to capture, but
I guess. And I mean, as far as a party experience goes, yeah, I guess it sort of got the atmosphere right, you know, and everything. But you got the atmosphere, like, fucking after 20 minutes. After that, it's just like, there's just pointless
there
are no shit happening
real complications.
Left.
It's just sort of mini incidents within there.
Yeah.
Like, oh, hey, a midget shows up, I guess. He's partying, then someone locks him in an oven.
Yeah, they trap him in the oven.
Oh, hey, the dog is attached to balloons.
Yeah. Oh, hey, the guy across the street is going to call the cops.
Oh, hey, the cops showed up.
Yeah, yeah. The first time. Yeah, I don't know. That movie was a lot longer than it needed to be.
Well, it was less than an hour and a half.
I know, but it felt longer.
Yeah.
Like I said, once the party started in, it wasn't near as grating, but It still wasn't a joy to sit through.
There's also a weird thing. I know they're trying to hammer home, well, not quite hammer home, but imply this is real, even though we all know it's not. So
yeah.
I don't know why anyone tries that anymore.
Yeah, I know. There's even some spots where it makes no sense for it to be real. There's just some shots where it's like,
there are multiple cameras on this. Three of them are explained.
Yeah.
There are many other shots that can't have possibly been from those three cameras.
Yes. Yeah. And then there's some, like, really, like, when the party starts, there's some really stylistic shots of, like, slow-mo and stuff, where I was just like, did the guy walk out there and get these shots?
I'm confused a little bit by the nature of the movie, and had some expectations about the ending based on that. It starts with a title card? I don't know. It starts with a Not even a disclaimer.
It's not even a disclaimer. It's just a...
WB and Legendary Pictures thank people for contributing
footage. Yeah, whoever contributed footage.
Apologies to the LAPD.
Yeah, yeah. As if it was, like, real. As if this, like, really happened.
Then we get to a point at the end where the dad is talking about, you know, I didn't know this had it in you. Then they had this weird moment where he's proud of his son, which I can sort of understand where in all this terribleness you need to find some positive aspect to it.
Despite the fact that his Benz is in the pool and he burned down the fucking house.
At that point, they're like, I don't know how you're going to pay for this. This is going to be your college fund.
Yeah.
At that point, I thought because of that intro... this whole thing was a wraparound, you know, okay, he looks at the cameraman, which he does look at the cameraman.
Yeah.
Thought, oh, hey, they're going to turn this into a movie, and that explains how we're seeing it. Nope. Yeah.
Nope.
Probably not. I mean, then it goes on to the other ending at the high school. The other ending with the girlfriend, and then the next ending with the character epilogue cards.
Yeah.
This guy got convicted.
Yeah, they do that number where they, you know, like...
And then, another party!
Oh, yeah! That was one thing I needed to address that, like, came out of left field for me. Okay, first off, when they're showing, like, the ending, you know, like, rundown, you know, with the text of what happened afterwards, JB got the shortest end of the stick that you could possibly get from all of that. Like, it says that, like... his criminal charges were dropped because his parents were able to convince the court that basically he had learning disability or something like that. Basically, he was retarded, so that he didn't know his actions and couldn't stand in trial. And then he had to ride the short bus for the rest of the time that he was in school. And that's it. There's no silver lining about it. No nothing.
Well, he doesn't get very much character development.
I know, but it just kind
of... None of them have much character development, but he has the least, being that... He's fat,
yeah,
and he has sex before the rest of them does.
So
he's got his own game going.
Yeah, it just kind of pissed me off because it was like, why are you giving Fatty the short end of the stick? Everybody else got like some type of silver lining on there.
Are you just feeling offended because we're fat?
I think so.
You expected
but
more?
Yeah, but it just bothered me. And then the other thing was, okay, the guy who's the camera guy,
who has very few lines. His own card at the end.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Where it's like. They're looking into the disappearance
of his...
He has,
like, two shots of him, and both of them, you know, he's basically decked out as Trenchcoat Mafia.
Yeah, Trenchcoat Mafia, and he's all dark and mysterious and shit, so basically... And he doesn't talk much. He has, like, a few lines in the course of the...
Yeah, say less than 10 lines.
Yeah, in the course of the whole thing. And then his ending card comes out of left field with this whole, investigating the possibility, you know,
investigating his parents missing. Because near the end, there's a throwaway line of, you can go back home, or how your parents going?
I live by myself.
Oh, you're getting scary, dude.
Yeah, you're scary, dude. And then
three or 4 minutes later.
Yeah. it's like, wait a minute. You're trying to tell me that the guy who videotaped the whole thing is, like, some possible, like...
Murderer
that, like, murdered his parents and his family.
I had
like,
fun at the party.
Yeah. I was like, what? Where the fuck? Who, like, approved that? Like, what purpose did that serve at the end of the movie? Like, at all? I thought the guy was just supposed to be a proxy, but our proxy for the party that we're supposed to be is, like, murdered his family? What's that supposed to say about us? It just bugged the fuck out of me. It was another one of those things that just randomly popped up,
one thought about. They just threw away a line and then...
Yeah.
Like, it feels like he improv that and then they decided to put in a card about it.
To, like, justify it for some reason. I don't fucking know. But yeah.
It was hard. I can't recommend this for anybody. I can say it is well shot
within, I guess,
the format. I mean, there's still shaky cam, but some of it is well done shaky cam. There are some nice steady shots occasionally.
It looks like a party.
Yeah.
I mean, got their effect. It looks like a party. The fact that the movie has grating characters and it's hard to sit through at times and it honestly feels like it's twice as long as it actually is a problem, but they accomplished, I guess, what they set out to do. So that's why I can't come, you know, right out and say, like, oh, it was a terrible movie. It's not like, especially when you're comparing it to a lot of other shaky cam movies that you see, like the horror movie stuff, like the Last Exorcism, like that shit.
Yeah.
It wasn't bad in comparison to that, but it still wasn't a good movie. I still can't honestly, like, come out and, like, recommend that people go see this movie. And yeah. The unfortunate fact is, even though it wasn't that bad of a movie, it still doesn't deserve to make a ton of money.
I think it made its budget back already. Yeah. They're talking about doing Project X 2 at this point. Yeah. Someone's putting together a story pitch for it.
Uh-huh. And to be honest, I doubt a second one of these would even come even half as close as this one did to being competent. You know what I mean? And the other sad part is it would probably make a buttload of money. Just because this movie seems to appeal to the general, like, the type of people who are in the movie seems to be the type that this movie would appeal to. You know what I mean? And they don't, and you know, I guess those type of people, they don't usually have the most discerning of tastes when it comes to movies. You know?
Yeah.
So I don't know. That's a bold rationalization that really doesn't make any sense, but whatever.
You have anything else?
I don't think so.
Anything you liked?
Did I like anything in the movie? I don't know. There were a couple of bits that did make me giggle every now and then. Whether or not they were good, that doesn't matter. It just matters if it made me giggle. Like, the security, the two kids who played security were mildly entertaining.
Okay. Yeah.
Like when he tasers the guy, and then he gets punched in the face. And then when they're hiding and they're freaking out because the party's gone out of control and they couldn't do anything about it. Like, I haven't seen Thomas in an hour. It's basically playing out like a survival movie for the kid. He sneaks into the guy's house. I am a ghost. Over and out.
Yeah, those characters.
Those were mildly entertaining. What else? I didn't like the midget, but I did for some reason like when he rolled out of the stove and just started indiscriminately punching people.
Yeah,
in the crotch.
Male and female.
Yeah, male and female. Just,
which is good, because we haven't seen many female crotch-punching jokes.
No. It was so...
I have been told it would hurt just as much.
Uh-huh. It was mildly entertaining that he just starts indiscriminately punching people in the crotch.
And all of them reacting in the same manner.
Yeah. So, I mean, like, there were a couple of bits that made me giggle a little bit. And what we brought up when he's on the roof and it... That one moment where it plays out almost like the guy should be a villain. That moment was slightly entertaining. Mm-hmm. But I don't think it was entertaining for the reasons they intended it to be.
Yeah.
So,
I think it was supposed to be a moment of awe.
Yeah, yeah,
there
like,
was
wow.
was a bit of scope to that, you know, larger scope, but it felt like it was out of a different movie for a moment.
Yeah. I will say that, like I said... You know, bringing up the whole scope thing. Like I said, it does look like a party that went out of control. There certainly are a ton of people at it. You know? So, I mean, like I said, scope-wise, I think they kind of... They sort of got what they were going for, but I don't know in the end. I don't know why this movie was made. I don't know who it was for specifically, and I don't know why it exists. But then again, I was questioning that when I saw the trailers for it. So, I don't know.
Alright. That's what we really thought.
Yeah. That rambling mess.
Leave us any comments, feedback, detractions on our Facebook page, The Wawasee Group, or our website, The Wawasee Group. The web address for that is wawaseegroup.blogspot.com. We're on iTunes.
We
are. Subscribe. Tell your family and friends.
Yep.
And we'll turn this into a Project X on the internet.
Yeah, we will.
thanks for listening.
Yeah.